Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Back with you, another edition of the Degenerate Hawkeye Podcast. And Biz, talk Hawkeye football with you and some hoops as Iowa gets it done on Monday night against Virginia and a look ahead to Purdue tomorrow night. Biz, a little bit delayed this week getting this one out. Busy time, a lot going on, but still fun to look back at. What a fun one it was, at least the final 18 minutes against Nebraska on Black Friday.
Yeah, it seems like a long time ago at this point. A lot's happened, and almost all of it's been incredibly positive for Iowa athletics, Trent. So we got a Nebraska choke to talk about. We've got some Iowa basketball, a crazy Iowa basketball win to talk about, and then obviously a rare opportunity to possibly win a Big Ten title to talk about.
Yes, there's a real possibility there, and we'll start digging into the game, get ready for the matchup against the Wolverines. But before we do, back to Nebraska, a game that for a long time it just felt like, well, it's inevitable. At one point, Nebraska is going to actually win a game in this series, and looked like for a long time it was going to be Friday. But Iowa, what this 2021 team has continued to do, chip away, hang around, make a play, defense, special teams, and they're going to win the football game. Special teams, of course, the punt block completely flipped the game there. But the play of Taylor, and most importantly maybe, the play of Caleb Shudak and some difficult kicks. The Council Bluffs boy, he had no problems with them over just across the pond there, over across the river and in Lincoln. What a performance from Shudak.
Yeah, he's just a machine. And, at some point our luck has to run out on kickers. We have to have a year where a kicker goes 11 for 19, but you look back at Iowa kickers in general. We've had a good run of kickers for a long, long time. So, and he may be as good as any of them. I think he's probably the best since Kading when you combine accuracy plus leg strength. I mean, Keith Duncan was an All-American, but you have to be blind not to see that Caleb Shudak has a significantly stronger leg than Duncan ever had, but. Trent, just the Nebraska game in general, you really, truly couldn't have scripted a better game. I mean, it's just that game was a true microcosm of where the two programs are at, Iowa and Nebraska, because you could just see middle of that third quarter, the Nebraska fan base, everybody just starting to puff their chest out a little bit. We're 3-8, and we're still going to beat you. But you go all the way back to 2014, Trent, do you remember the quote from Sean Eichhorst, their AD at the end of that game?
Yeah, something along the lines of, we had to evaluate where Iowa was as a program.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and evaluate where Nebraska's at as a program right now, Trent, because let's talk just big picture here. The last 7 years since that quote, Iowa is 63-23. We've been eligible for 7 straight bowl games. Obviously, we didn't go last year, but 7 straight bowl eligibility, and now 2 divisional titles. Nebraska, 34-48, have only had 1 winning year in that time and 0 division titles. But the last 18 minutes, I feel like I said, true microcosm where the programs are at. You've got one program in Iowa who hit by the flu beforehand, TD overturned early in the game. You fumble inside the five. You're down 15 with 16 minutes to go. You had every reason to pack it in and you know, just accept the fact that it wasn't your day. I mean, just like you said, it didn't look like it was going to be our day. Things were not going our way. But we kept grinding, and we found a way. On the flip side, you've got a Nebraska coach who, I assume you saw the post-game comment, but his exact quote, the blocked punt was the game. What? This is the leader of your program announcing that the moment adversity struck, the first time you had anything go bad all game, the game's over.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, they still had a 5-point lead and the ball in the fourth quarter. But you could see, I mean, he's right. The game was over at that point. The whole mood, attitude of both teams just 100% changed. There was no doubt at that point we were going to win the game. And, you know, it couldn't have been scripted any better. I know people love to talk about that Nebraska was so close this year, but there's a reason they lost that many one-score games. They're not a mentally tough program, and they don't have a mentally tough coach. And you can say what you want about Iowa football. They're not pretty. It's often win ugly. But, man, are we a mentally tough team. We just kept fighting, and we found a way.
That's what you have to do. And when, you know, it's so tight, and especially when you look around the Big Ten West, and I know there's plenty of arrows to throw at the division as a whole, and they still have not beat a team from the East in the championship game. Now, I would argue whatever division Ohio State's been in, that was going to be the superior division regardless of what happened over the last 7-8 years. But that aside, you're building and you're going up against teams very similarly built to what you are. So you have to win in the margins. You have to do those small things. And it's what I was so good at. It's what Wisconsin has been so good at. And it's where you look at the coaching staffs and you look at Nebraska and say, I don't think this ever gets turned around. I don't think that all of a sudden the light's going to flip on and suddenly that program's going to be 9-3 next season because they were so close this year. You said exactly right, Biz. They lose games like this for a reason. And it starts with the guy on the sidelines of the head man.
Well, I assume maybe you didn't see the breaking news right before we started today, but no more Adrian Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
Just put his name in the transfer portal within the last probably half hour here, which I'm not sure anybody's surprised by it, but still, I mean, that's major news. That is your all-time career yardage leader deciding, and I don't know if it's a mutual decision or he decided on his own, but he decided, I'm done. I'm moving on, and not that I'm done playing football, because he certainly won't. I mean, if you've read his response, he's going to go find somewhere else to play. He's ready to move on and move on from the program, which seems to be a pretty common theme for all of their skill talent the last couple of years.
Well, and one thing, there's a lot of speculation that he'll end up at Kansas State. Skylar Thompson, the fine quarterback for the Wildcats, is graduating, moving on, and his girlfriend apparently is a soccer player at K-State. So a lot of people connecting the dots there. I'll tell you what, going from Scott Frost to Chris Klieman, yeah, I could see some improvements happening there. Talking about a guy that actually knows how to win football games and doing those little things compared to Scott Frost, that's a big upgrade for Martinez.
Anything's a big upgrade for Martinez. I mean, I feel bad for that guy. He was kind of the whipping boy of the program. And I think finally, midway through this year, everybody realized the whipping boy was, you're pointing the finger the wrong direction. Go point it at the coach, not at the kid that's been busting his butt. So, but let's move on, Trent, from bashing Nebraska, which we could probably do all day long. But I had Statboy look into blocked punts for touchdowns and the history of Iowa. It's kind of a, my question to Statboy, it felt like, in my memory at least, when we blocked punt for a touchdown, it usually equals a win. So I had him dig into blocked punts for touchdowns during the Ferentz and Fry era. And you ready to go down memory lane?
Yes, yeah. I've already got a couple that are jumping to mind, but let's go through it.
Yeah, so it doesn't happen that often. Obviously, for a while, we used to block a lot of punts. But blocked punt for touchdown is another thing. So it's only happened 15 times. This is the 15th time it's happened since 1979. So, ironically, Trent, the last time we blocked a punt for a touchdown before last Friday was
the 2014 game. Yeah.
And if you remember that one, it really wasn't a blocked punt. It was Nebraska blocked or punted it off their own lineman, and then Drew Ott scooped it up and scored from 12 yards out. But it had been 7 years since we blocked them for a touchdown, but. So some fun stats. First, we are 12-3 in the games that we blocked punts for touchdowns. So I was generally right. If we blocked punt for touchdown, usually leads to a good outcome. Amazingly enough, Trent, The 14-yard return by Kyler Fisher was the second longest return that we've ever had for a blocked punt. Obviously, can you remember number one?
The longest?
Longest return of a blocked punt for a touchdown. You were there. I was there.
Oh, Adrian Claiborne. Yeah, Penn State. Yeah, the whiteout.
Adrian Claiborne picked it up and ran 53 yards. The others, 0 yards, 10 yards, 0 yards, 10 yards, 1 yard, 10 yards, 0, 0, 0, 0, 7, 1, and 12. So it was, that leads you to believe we don't get too risky unless they're deep in the air territory. But and the Claiborne one, obviously we weren't going for a blocked punt. I just got kind of lucky. But yeah, second longest scoop and score you've ever seen in our lives.
Would not have thought that, but all right, there we are. What else we got as we look back at block punts for TDs?
Two more. First of all, it confirms, when you look at the numbers, just how great our special teams were between 02 and 05. Mm-hmm. In that four-year period, we blocked five for touchdowns, you know, 02 and 05, including in back-to-back bowl games, and the LSU and Florida bowl games in 04 and 05. So, yeah. And then we had a huge gap in there where we, you know, hadn't done it for a long time. And so we had more in that four-year period than we've had in the 16 years since.
Matt Malloy, Scotty Bolin, who else we got names that we're going to go through?
Oh, now you got to make me go back and look for the text and stat boys. Hold on. While I'm looking, I'll tell you the one last fun stat. There's a quiz question for you.
Okay.
This is not an Iowa blocked punt. This is an opponent's blocked punt. In 1983, there's a stat boy bonus here. In 1983, Iowa beat Michigan State 12-6. Michigan State's only 6 points came on a blocked punt for a score. Name that Spartan who picked it up and ran in to score.
Phil Parker.
Phil Parker, exactly. So that's only stat boy could dig up that nugget. So 12-6, but Phil Parker with the blocked punt. So
that's why he's the best.
Yeah, the 02 to 05, it was Mike Follett blocked one against Utah, or recovered one against Utah State against Purdue that same year in 02. Jameer Roberts had one.
Ooh, number seven.
And then we blocked one in 03 against Iowa State, and he has Smith listed as recovering. I'm not sure who Smith would even be.
Cameron Smith? Does that ring a bell?
I don't know. But then you've got Matt Malloy in 04, and you've got Considine picking it up in the LSU game in 05. So there's your returns. The games we lost, the three losses, was the Drew Ott game in 2014. You've got Timmy Dodge back in 99. You
Rockwell Swaledale.
Yep. Good. Nebraska, we lost 42-7, but Timmy Dodge scored the only points on a blocked punt. And the third one, way back in 1988, we lost to Colorado 24-21, but special team superstar and NFL legend Merton Hanks got one in that game. So, but generally, those are the only three times we've ever lost. 12-3, so a blocked punt for touchdown usually equals a Hawkeye victory.
Like that. Let's get another one on Saturday. What do you say?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Anything else from Stat Boy on block punts?
No. I think we're ready to move on and talk future. I mean, let's the other Stat Boy information. He's got. Let's kind of tie this season in a bow, Trent. Let's talk about the season in general, because we talked about before kind of best case and worst case scenario seasons, with best case scenario being 2019 when we hit our skid this year, and worst case scenario being the 2006 collapse. Well, there's another year, a third year that Statboy and I talked about this week that I think probably, now that the season is wrapped up, is an even better comparison to this year. Do you know what year that would be?
No, what do you got?
2004, Trent, the last Big Ten championship team. You go back and look at that season, you compare it to this season, man, there's a lot of similarities. I assume you remember the 2014.
Yeah, yes, I do. A lot of defense, a lot of injuries at running back. Had Sam Brownlee out there, Big Chuck's Aaron Mickens running the football, and, of course, Drew Tate doing heroics.
Yep, you had a great D. You had a really shaky offense. You want to know how shaky that offense was and how shaky this year's offense have been, Trent?
I'm going to guess they're probably very similar when you look at overall statistics.
If you look at the last 20 years of Iowa football, the 2 years that we had the least amount of offense per game, 2004 and 2021.
Wow.
So not exactly offensive juggernauts. But you also had really good special teams of that team. You had Schlicker, the kicker, was 21 for 26 that year. And you had a future pro in David Bradley at punter. Mm-hmm. And you also had a couple truly, truly ugly victories, including the ugliest one of all, as we've talked about, the 6-4 game at Penn State. So lots and lots of similarities. So what I wanted to do, Trent, I've got a quick quiz for you, 2004 quiz, three questions.
Okay.
We'll see if you can get them. All right, number one, who led the 2004 team in rushing?
That would have been Marcus Simmons.
You're close, but no, you said the name earlier.
Sam Brownlee?
Sam Brownlee. Oh, Sam Brownlee was our leading rusher that year. 94 carries for 227. A 2.4-yard average. Just a smash-mouth football with Sam Brownlee. Jamel Lewis had 200. Marquise Simmons had 194. Aaron Mickens, 127. So you may never, ever see that again in major Division I football. A Power 5 team winning their conference with no one rushing for 230 yards.
It seemingly is impossible to do, even teams that run the spread and throw it, you know, each team 60 times a game. It just, there is some semblance of a running game that goes along with it. It's baffling.
Yeah. We talked about the amazing defense, and one of the things, Statboy sent me the starters for each game. One of the things that really helped, that team was amazingly healthy. There were only 13 guys who started games on defense that year, including 9 starters that didn't miss a game at all. My question's pretty simple, Trent. There's 13 guys that started games that year. You should be able to name at least 10 of them. There are some well-known names in that 2004 defense. So can you name 10 defensive players that started games that year?
Well, the two cornerbacks, Antoine Allen, Jovan Johnson.
There's two.
Greenway and Hodge.
There's two more.
Defensive line, Babineau. Roth.
You got 6 so far. You're missing 2 defensive linemen, 2 linebackers that played games or started games that year, and 3 cornerbacks or D-backs that started games that year. You're missing both safeties.
Both safeties. Pascal?
Yes, Pascal was one.
And Considine?
Considine, that's 8. There's another safety that filled in 2 games.
Another safety. Ooh. White? Tommy Soybean?
No. Miguel Merrick. That's the first one you missed.
Oh, okay. Yeah, New Jersey.
2 linebackers. One of them started 9 games. The other one jumped in and started 2.
Kevin Worthy?
Nope.
Okay.
The linebackers are top for this. George Lewis,
yeah.
Ed Miles.
Oh, okay.
And then you've got 2 defensive linemen that you're missing. One of them was a...
Colin Cole?
Nope. He's gone by then. But one of them was an Iowa City native and kind of an original legend. We used to love him in the stands.
Lupke.
Lupke. And then the last one was Derek Robinson.
Oh, D-Rob. Yeah.
That is an impressive, impressive defense. That's a defense that you add it up. They played a lot of professional football. I think Jovan Johnson was still playing in the CFL until recently. And you've got Babs and Greenway played a decade each. And that's a lot of talent on defense.
Yes, it is. That's a fun trip down memory lane. I love that team. It was so much fun. And after the just whipping that they took down at Arizona State and Tempe after the long delay, came back, played well against Michigan, and then run the table after that. What a fun season it was. And now we're maybe trending towards the same destination here. We'll see what happens on Saturday.
Yeah, one last quiz question for 2004. It's a simple one, Trent. How many touchdowns did Warren Holloway have in his career before the catch?
1. Well, 0 before the catch. Yeah, 1. And it came on the final catch of his career.
1 and only. I figure that's a good way to wrap up that season, because if somehow miraculously our season can end that same way, again, if we're going to compare the two seasons, it might as well end with the same fairy tale ending that team did.
One more from Stat Boy. Schitz was really busy at work because we had a request on Twitter asking, when was the last time Iowa won back-to-back games while only scoring 1 offensive touchdown? In the Stat Boy database, it goes back to 1979. It has never happened. Technically, in 1988, they beat Iowa State 10-3, followed it up with a tie against Michigan State 10-10. But never before in the Hayden/Kirk era has Iowa won back-to-back games with only 1 offensive touchdown.
I feel like that's been like a weekly trend of our podcast this year, Trent, is finding something that this year has never happened before.
Yeah.
So Let's hope we're talking about Kirk has never had a Big Ten title by himself. We've never had a not
outright,
terrible.
Yeah.
Let's hope next week we're talking about another never happened before.
So how does it happen? How does this game play out in order for Iowa to win? Because I don't want to get too crazy here. I know the media is absolutely in love right now with Michigan after what they did last week, the physical domination that they had against Ohio State. But the way they play, the way Harbaugh likes to play games, it feels like it's setting up that this is going to be a four-quarter game. I'm excited. I'm optimistic, and you know I'm normally not the most optimistic guy as it pertains to Iowa athletics. I'm going to guess you're in the same boat.
Well, I know why you're optimistic, Trent. You're optimistic because Spencer Petras is back under the...
That is not the reason.
Well, we won't get into your angry mid-game rant that you had. And I can spend 20 minutes making fun of you on that, but I'll let you off the hook here, Trent. The fact of the matter is, whoever the quarterback is, Petras or Padilla, neither one of them are... neither one of them are great by any means. But I agree with the decision. I know you don't. I agree with it for one reason only. Spencer Petras, like him, hate him, whatever, he has handled adversity in tough environments really well. And that's the one thing I give him credit for is he went into Iowa State, really handled it well. He handled it great at Nebraska. I mean, he's shown kind of a calm demeanor. Maryland at night, he played well. He handles those situations well. And I just thought the first half of the Nebraska game, Padilla, that was the first time he'd ever had a true road environment, and it showed. I mean, he had kind of that deer in the headlights look a little bit. So, again, if we have to rely on the quarterback on Saturday, we're probably in deep trouble. Just we need him to be a game manager. And so, you asked, how can we win it, Trent? I've got three things I think we need to do well. I'm sure you probably have some as well. But my number one thing is we have to commit to running the ball up the middle on repeat immediately.
Yes.
We have run the ball really well the last month, but we're stubborn, and we continue to think outside zone will work occasionally. Let's not overthink it. We've got the best offensive lineman in the nation and possibly the best center in the last decade. When we run the ball up the middle, we are a really good running team. And finally in the fourth quarter of the Nebraska game, we finally said, you know what? We can just run the same play over and over and over because they can't stop it. And we did. And we finally busted over 55 yards. So we've got to commit to doing that early and often. And honestly, I don't care if we run the ball up the middle three times in a row and get 1 yard and punt. Keep doing it. That is the best way we can win this game. You look at Michigan's run D, Trent, it's not that great. Here's the numbers. They gave up 196 yards rushing to Rutgers, 199 yards to Michigan State, 181 to Maryland, 140 to Nebraska. Those are four. Or Michigan State's good, but the other three are three very mediocre teams that all ran for 140 yards or more against Michigan. So it's doable.
It is. I was looking at some numbers at Pro Football Focus, and we know Aiden Hutchinson's a stud. Ajabo's incredible. Those two guys off the edge are as good as I was going to see and maybe seen in a long time. The defensive tackles, Smith's good. The other one, Hinton, is not nearly as good. But the other thing, they're two inside linebackers in the scheme they play in that kind of hybrid 3-3-5 stack look that they have. Their inside linebackers have not been good this year. You mentioned some of the numbers there. It's not great. You're right. And this is a kind of game where if Harbaugh wants to play in a phone booth and he wants to have this thing be an old school grudge match, I think it plays into Iowa's hands. I'm not getting crazy here. If it comes down to a game where Petras got to throw it 25 times and they got to drop back a bunch, it's going to be ugly. But you're exactly right. Run the ball, run it up the gut, power football, get out the air horn. Let's go.
Yep. That's my number one. My number two, Trent, is same thing we talked about the Wisconsin game. It was one of the keys to the Wisconsin game, and our coaching staff refused to follow it. It is punting is winning. If we get behind the chains, if we get to a third and 14 or a second and 12, just run the ball. Don't get behind the chains and try to get greedy. What lost us the Wisconsin game? Well, a lot of things, but what lost the Wisconsin game in the second quarter? Twice, we decided third and long, drop back and pass. If we do that, Aiden Hutchinson is just going to tee off on our tackles. So just accept it. Accept the fact that on third and 14, you are not going to get a first down.
Yeah.
Run the ball and punt. Mm-hmm. Like, if we try to get aggressive when we get behind the chains, if you get behind the chains, just accept it. That possession's dead and move on. Because if we drop back and pass in obvious passing situations, Aiden Hutchinson will kill us. And so it was the key to the Wisconsin game. I think the key to this game is cut your losses when you fall behind and just accept the fact that we're going to have to punt the ball 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times. It's okay. Punting's winning.
Like those, and you're exactly right. 3rd and 14, you're not going to be able to make a play. Just go with the inside draw play. Maybe you'll pop one. You know, late in Hayden's career, seemed like they ran that seemingly every 3rd and long. But in a game like this, sure, eat some clock. Let's go get the defense out there on the field. All right, there's two. Where's number three?
Well, the third one, Trent, you and I are both big fans of the Solid Verbal podcast. And they have a quote they always talk about, the let-down look-ahead sandwich. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the world's biggest let-down look-ahead sandwich. You can't possibly come up with a bigger let-down look-ahead sandwich. This is Michigan coming off their biggest win, obviously the Harbaugh era, but probably the biggest win in the last 20 years. And they're looking ahead at possibly their biggest opportunity to win a national championship in the last 20 years. So this is the classic letdown look-ahead sandwich. So we have to come out and jump on them early. We can't come out scared. We can't be – when I say jump on them, I mean we can't come out and make mistakes early. This game, like you said, I think it's going to be a four-quarter game. But I also could see if things start poorly for us and we give them confidence early on, you know, it could go off the rails pretty quickly. So I think you've got to come out, punch them in the mouth, you know, be the more physical team early on, and be ready to play four quarters. So you and I think both are in the same opinion here. I mean, this is a game, I'm not sure we can win it, but I think we can be in it. Mm-hmm. And that's all you can ask right now. So you got to come out right away and punch them in the mouth. Be the more physical team right away. Let them know we're not Ohio State. We're not this finesse team. We need to pound the football over and over again. And on defense, we got to come out and hit them. I mean, it's – watching that Ohio State game, Ohio State just isn't a very physical team. We got to come out and just be physical. Show them that we're there to play four quarters and come out right away. So we're both, like I said, I'm cautiously optimistic we can make this a game. But, you know, I really, really hope we come out with the game plan of we've got to be the more physical team.
Right there with you. That's what Michigan did a week ago, and now you got to come back and punch them in the mouth. Scary thing is Hassan Haskins is playing incredibly well. And even when the plays where it looks like he's got two, he gets six. And Corum, even though he's banged up, he's really good too. Going to have to be great there. The way they throw the ball, though, I think sets up incredibly well. A couple more numbers to throw your way. Cade McNamara this year, 14 touchdowns, three interceptions, thrown for just shy of 2,300 yards. He's fine, whatever. But this one really surprised me. He has actually been much better this year when he's been blitzed as opposed to when he has not been blitzed this year. Well, what does Iowa do well? Yeah, they sit back in their zone, make you make a read, and make plays there. I think this also sets up incredibly well. If we can just at least slow down that running game to a certain degree, make McNamara be the guy that beats them, I think they got a chance here, the way that the Iowa defense is playing. It's crazy, Bits. We're talking ourselves into it here. I'm getting excited. Last time I was this pumped up, didn't go very well.
They're going to get their rushing yards. I mean, the fact of the matter is that they're a really good offense, and they're a really good running team. They're going to get 150, 200 rushing yards. I mean, Minnesota did that against us. I mean, Nebraska did until they decided to stop doing what worked. I mean, we're going to give up our yards. I'm fine with giving up 6-yard runs. We'll live with that. I mean, it's you can't give up the big plays. Force them to go 12, 15 plays and assume at some point they're going to make a mistake. At some point they're going to shoot themselves in the foot. I mean, that's been Iowa football to a T all year long, is be patient, let the other team make mistakes. The pressure is all on them. And so if we can, like I said, we can make it a four-quarter game, boy, at some point you got to like our chances that they're going to make a mistake because they've got all the pressure in the world on them. And we're there. We weren't supposed to be there, and we can play free and loose and see what happens.
And that letdown, I think, is absolutely monstrous, as you said. Biz, it's going to be fun. Looking forward to it. I wish I was going to be there with you, but fortunately, family, a few other things got in the way. I'll tell you, though, being there in 2015, that environment for people, and I'm sure a lot of people may be listening to us on the drive over, get ready. That environment, the way the buildup goes, the day just hanging out in Indianapolis, the fan fest they have set up, if you got your kids or you just want to do a little something different other than be bellied up at the bar, it is so much fun. And Michigan being there for the first time ever, too, boy, it's going to be a great environment.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and the thing I'm most excited about is, you know, that 2015 game, just the effort level of both teams was just off the charts. I mean, Iowa played insanely hard. Michigan State played insanely hard. You know, I think you're just going to see that same effort level just across the board. It's just the desire and the excitement that you see from the Iowa players this week. It's hard not to be excited. I mean, it's just watching them and the comments they made. I don't know if you saw Kayvon Merriweather, but he just seemed giddy. He seemed like a little kid talking about Christmas. I mean, it's just the excitement level across the board. That's why I said I hope we don't come out and lay an egg. Let's come out and battle and make it a four-quarter game. I don't think we will, but you never know. I mean, it's things go bad early on. It could snowball on you. But
Wisconsin
let's
game.
Let's just hope you start the fourth quarter. We're within a score, and at that point, who knows?
Anything can happen. Anything can happen in basketball, too, but I don't know if anything positive is going to happen tomorrow night. Fun win against Virginia on Monday. Not a vintage Virginia team under Tony Bennett, though he is still devilishly handsome. Regardless of that, though, it's Purdue, the now number one team in the country after the Duke loss, and we know it hasn't been many pretty trips over there. Well, last time I was in a Rose Bowl, it went pretty well. Back in 2015-16, but usually not a fun road trip to West Lafayette for the basketball team.
Yeah, I don't know. I have zero expectations for tomorrow's game, but you know, that's why winning that game on Monday was so important because, you know, it's probably likely that we may lose the next three games. I mean,
maybe next four. The Utah State game is going to be tough too.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at it. I mean, we're probably going to be underdogs the next three. And so even if you lose the next three, you come out of that 7-3 with a win against Virginia, you know, you're okay. And so, but, you know, I think this team will battle Purdue. I don't think they'll win, but I don't see it being a 40-point blowout either. I think we'll lose by 15 to 20, but I hope at halftime it's at least a ball game. You know, this team's, as they saw on Monday, they've got some toughness to them. And, you know, they've certainly got some flaws. They're, you know, Purdue is a terrible matchup for us, but they'll battle. They'll keep fighting. The thing that impressed me most about this team, you go to Virginia and you only have four turnovers against that type of defense. That's hard to do. This team takes care of the basketball, and they, as we've seen, they can really score. So if they get hot, you never know.
Never know. Just get a chance. Go out there. You know, we've talked about the play, obviously, of Keegan Murray, and he continues to play at an incredibly high level. I didn't even realize it until I was looking at the stats just yesterday. Chris Murray's now shooting 61% from three. That's not going to continue all season long, but he's almost like Keegan was a year ago. Just the development from him, what we've seen, maybe a year behind his brother, but I'm really excited about the future also with Chris Murray.
Well, and I've said all along, Trent, I mean, in high school, he's a great shooter in high school also. I mean, he is a shooter. Is he a 61% shooter? No, but can he shoot mid-40s? Absolutely. I mean, he can shoot the ball. And the thing you have to love the most about him, he is fearless. He's not afraid to shoot. I mean, there are times when he probably shouldn't be shooting, especially on some of his drives and moves to the hoop. But both the Murray boys, they don't lack for confidence. I think every time the ball goes up, they think it's going in, which that's half the battle sometimes. As we've seen from some Franz teams in the past, they've had some guys that seem to lack for confidence in big moments. This team doesn't seem to have that. They struggled. The second half wasn't pretty, but they never backed down, and they probably deserved to lose on Monday, but they found a way to win, which that's not always been, as we've griped about in the past, that's not always been a sign of Franz teams in the past.
Very, very true. Yeah, we've had plenty of those conversations throughout the year. I'll give you 2-2 right now over the next four. Are you taking it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think we have a decent chance against Illinois next week. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're playing all that well, but, Hilton's going to be rocking. I just think the likelihood of us going into Mackey Arena or Hilton and winning is pretty low. So if we can beat Utah State, beat Illinois, and go 2-2, I think that's, not only would I take it, I'd sign up for it right now. I mean, I think that'd be considered a really good stretch of basketball if you go 3-2 out of that group of five.
With that, Biz, let's get some picks, as I think we're both going to be probably laying the points with Purdue tomorrow in basketball. Let's get to football picks as you take a commanding lead after last week. I was trying to chase you down. I was with you like in Michigan. I went the other way, and that was a disaster. Here we go this week as we get going. Biz is 21-16-1. I am 17-21. Let's start it up. Iowa, Michigan, what do you have?
Last week you were bragging about being close. This week you just kind of casually skimmed over the fact that I think I pretty much locked it up at this point, Trent.
But we still got bowl games. We got plenty of other things we can do.
Yeah, but I'm on a roll. 3-0 last week. So.
Yeah, that's good.
What are we starting with? Game of the week or Iowa Michigan?
Iowa Michigan. Let's kick that one off first.
All right. So, well, I'm going to go with the same theory I had last week, Trent. I picked the over last week and it hit. I think same thing this week. I think 43.5 is just too low. I think both teams are going to put up a few points in this game. I think we can put some points on them, and I think you know they've got a good offense. I think this is going to be similar to the Nebraska game. I think it's going to be mid-20s. The winner is going to get upper 20s, and both teams get to 20 or above. So give me over 43.5.
I'm going the other way in a different direction. I'm using a bet that we've never used before, but I was floored when I saw this number. Michigan team total. What do you think it is?
Michigan team total. Got to be 27?
Yeah, it's 27.5. I'm taking the under.
27-16, basically, is what they're figuring.
Yep, and I'm taking the under all day long. I get it. I understand it, but I'm just betting on Phil Parker here. Give me Michigan under 27.5. I absolutely love that one. Well, the big national game of the week is Georgia-Alabama. Crimson Tide underdogs and significant underdogs for the first time. I have my concerns, Biz, about Saban being able to push those buttons, but that offensive line is brutal. They scored 3 points in the first 58 minutes against Auburn. Georgia's a completely different animal. I know some people maybe see the number approaching a touchdown and get scared. I just can't do it. I'm going to lay the points. Give me the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I refuse. Everything screamed you should bet Georgia in this game, but I refuse to bet against Nick Saban in the these situations. So I think Nick Saban knows what you know, which is his offensive line cannot hang with Georgia. So I think Nick Saban's going to pull a game plan straight out of the Kirk Ferentz playbook. He's going to slow this game up. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be low scoring. Give me under 50.
Under 50 in the Alabama-Georgia game. We wrap it up with our pick of the week. Biz, what's your favorite play on a limited betting menu?
Give me Kenny Pickett and the Pitt Panthers getting 3, Trent. I like Wake Forest. They're a fun story, but Pitt's just a better football team. And if you're going to give me a better football team getting a field goal or less, I'll take it.
Taking Pitt over Wake Forest. What a championship game. And speaking of that, you think of the numbers they're going to do with that.
All 22,000 people that'll be at that game.
The competition that they have. I got another total here. San Diego State, Utah State, the under in the Mountain West championship game. San Diego State's defense is great. They got the best punter in the nation. Sorry, Torrey Taylor. They are excellent. Under 50.5 all day long in the Aztec, in the Aggies for supremacy in the Mountain West. Those are our picks as I still work to chase down Biz. It's not looking very likely at this point, but I'll see. Maybe I can get Biz to let us pick like 10 bowl games and I'll have an opportunity. We'll do that in the coming weeks. Before that, though, time to roll out with Biz's Beat.
Hey, kids, gather around for Biz's Beat of the Day. Okay, here's Biz's Beat of the Day.
Biz's Beat this week, Trent, is about emotional Kirk Ferentz. I assume you saw the press conference. Man, he was on the verge of tears 3 or 4 times, including when talking about Chick-fil-A. So, honestly, though, there's a quote in there. I don't know if you saw the quote, but his quote, and I'll just read it to you. The best part of coaching is building relationships with players and watching them develop and succeed in life. The heart of coaching is in caring for the other person. The game and the score is important, but how you treat each other will define you. Yeah. Not only emotional Kirk, that gets me emotional Biz as well. It's just, that is a great quote. And it's kind of the essence of Kirk Ferentz. You know, there's been his tenure here has been a roller coaster. There's been times when you think the game has passed him by. Mm-hmm. There's times when it's time for him to move on. man, just seeing his emotions, it makes you wonder, you know, just how close he is to the end of the rope. But I think the last 18 months, Trent, has been a real grind on him, and you could just see it, that press conference, just how proud he is of this team, how proud he is of this coaching staff. Honestly, probably how proud he is of himself for learning and listening and being a better person. We've talked about it in the past, and I'll just say it one more time. Like, this program has come out the other side of what's happened the last 18 months, just a better program in general. And it's awesome to see. And man, what a true fairy tale ending this would be, Trent, if we could somehow win the Big Ten title, win the Rose Bowl title, and send Kirk off into the sunset as a true hero. So is it going to happen? I don't know. But the cool thing is, Trent, we're talking early December, and there's still a possibility of it happening. So go Hawks.
Go Hawks indeed. And you're exactly right, Biz. Something that I brought up on my radio show earlier in the week. He's always emotional. He's always been emotional. But this one does feel different. And if it does culminate with the first outright Big Ten championship since 1985, the first Rose Bowl win since the 1950s, don't be surprised if it is actually one where Kirk calls it a career after that one. Still a lot of hay to get in the barn, though, to make that happen. And make sure that you come back next week, Biz. I don't even want to hear your voice. I want to see a very hoarse Jace Bisgard when we talk next Tuesday.
It'll probably be a horse Jace Bisgard regardless. But win or lose, I probably won't be able to talk. But let's hope we're celebrating some more first evers next week when we talk. So one way or another, Trent, win or lose, I'm excited. I think the Hawks are going to go there and give it a hell of a fight, and we'll see what happens.
Bring back a victory, Biz.
Go Hawks.